You're listening to a 95 BFM podcast.
The mayor controls the top. The problem is I've been to a lot of meetings. I know a lot of people and they're saying, how can we get resources to where we need them for the homeless? They approach council. Council says to them, or the mayor says to them, go off and go talk to this organisation and that. The reality is people are struggling with an unaccountable council. And it's like this. The public are like a large horse. And the mayor sits there and he's got a rope around the horse's neck and he controls it. Now, why can a little man defeat a big powerful creature like a horse? Because the horse fights the rope. Now, this is it. You go to council, it's set up to fight with millions of dollars. No. The way to change is to take out the person at the top and replace them with someone who will get the job done, someone with interests more in line with what the people want, not someone who will sit there and everything runs smoothly, will make more promises another 3 years. Because the mayor, as I said, controls the appointment of these major bodies, Panuku that controls the property. You've got Auckland Water, you've got Auckland Transport. So you've got all these things that can be set up by the mayor. And when he puts in new people, and the problem is there is a complete culture of unaccountability. Like, for example, issues of environment. We hear the mayor and other people say they're so environmentally friendly. Forget about the carbon footprint of their tens of thousands of signs. What we're looking at is, do you know that from 2014 to 2017, a third of the trees in Auckland were cut down because they removed the protections? And Gough hasn't brought them back. So I don't know how many more have gone. So there's talk of planting a million trees, but at the same time, he also has permission in the council to remove all the pine forest out of Western Springs. And I understand there's some plans for building. And just next door, Chamberlain Park, they're going to remove half of that and put up some more rugby fields and put up car parks. It's like council's attitude seems to be, see a paradise, put up a parking lot. Now, even in Mount Roskill, you've got them trying to put in 10,000 houses by taking out a lot of the park area. So what I'm saying is you need to get on top. And also, Auckland Water, how in 2019 can we still have sewage flows in eastern Auckland and at Westmere and we pay so much in rates and nothing's done? And yet all these high-paid CEOs keep their jobs. And what about water? What about Ports of Auckland? They just lost $100 million by buying all these big cranes that haven't been used for a year. I don't see any heads roll. There is no accountability. And what they get paid? The CEO of Auckland makes more than some of the big cities in the world. It is incredible because they've got some crazy belief that it has to match the private sector. Well, there's a reason the private sector gets paid so well. It's because they can go bust. If they make a bad decision, they can go down. But unfortunately, that won't happen here because they're supported by the captive population of Auckland. They can never go bust because they're funded by this. So if they talk about that, go to the private sector and soon find that they expect results, so bad luck. So what I want to do is cut down the excessive pays of these people at the top and bring up the people at the bottom. Only now Gough says, oh, working wage. Well, guess what? That's what they should have done a long time ago. And I'm 100% behind that. I mean, I, like you, we've been students, we've worked at these jobs, and we know one thing. You've got no bargaining power. Unless you're in management, you've got no bargaining power. But why I should stand? Because a couple of reasons. You've got to be strong to stand up to them. And Gough, either he can't do the job or he won't do the job. Tamihere, he's strong, but you have to be smart. You have to be sensible. And you cannot be a loose cannon. And that's what's been displayed by his plans. So you need someone who knows what they're doing. And because I'm a lawyer, yes, I can read the thing. No one pulls the wool over my eyes. And I'll get in there and I'll clean house and fix it up and give Auckland what it needs. Make Auckland the paradise it should be. But you have to have vision. And that's why I was talking before about tourist places. We need a Polynesian Cultural Centre. I was pushing for that in 91 when I was chairman of the Pacific Island Advisory Committee, and even pushing when I was on the local Otara Community Board. Nothing. Biggest Polynesian city in the world, nothing. And also, like I was saying, an Azure Arch. Put restaurants on there, build it a bit bigger, put trains through, and make it earn money. Instead of it being a drain, make it earn money. And down the bottom, the city along there, there's nothing on the waterfront. In places like LA, you've got Venice Beach. You've got in Sydney, the Opera House. What have we got on there? You need some tourist things that when people come, they will go and spend money. If they're there for a day or two, they spend money in Auckland, and we can showcase that to the world. So you need a mayor with vision. You need a mayor who's strong, a mayor who won't have the wool pulled over their eyes, and a mayor who can deal with the people. And lastly, you've got to have a mayor with a love for the people, who's concerned about making sure there's a fair sharing of resources. For example, in South Auckland, now my concern there is I grew up there. And whatever you want to call them, the reality is they're slums. And it's a tragedy for our youth and more for the Pacific Island people, because such a huge amount of the Pacific Island population are in those slum areas. Their kids, our kids, grow up at a disadvantage. I remember when I came to university, there were four of us that used to catch the 487 from Otara. Only four of us. Now it's actually pretty good. There's a lot of people. And things have changed, but for a lot of others, they're in that scrap heap. They start off with a disadvantage. They never get past it. So what I want to do is give a better life for everyone. I'm standing because nothing will change. I could see that we're getting the same rubbish served up to us every single time, and the press is following along, creating this two-ring circus with only two people standing. So I'm thinking, no, somebody has to get up and say something. Say the things that people want to say. Say the things that need to be said to make change. Because without people knowing it, if you're always served slop, you don't know any better. What I'm saying, you got a choice. You got a choice for a real mayor who wants change, who cares about our city and cares about our people and will make the necessary changes. And I'm not there to pay off any lobbyists. I'm not there to keep people happy. You don't like what I say, vote for someone else. That's what I say. This is what I stand for, and that's what I'll do.
A couple of things I want to have a chat with you about. Sure. In terms of policies you've discussed. Yes. So some people might be a little interested in the fact that you want to take out bike lanes bus lanes in the CBD. A lot of people would probably think that seems illogical because we're trying to take the traffic off the road. Could you explain a little bit of that logic?
Once upon a time, there was the old saying, all roads lead to Rome. I interpret that these days as all roads lead to congestion. And like I said, what you need to do is get a functional rail system up. Now, there's talk of monorail, there's talk of light rail, heavy rail, but the reality is you need some rail. Now, I'm not talking about building multi-billion dollar tunnels everywhere or knocking down houses. The problem is houses are so expensive, at least $1 million a piece now, that taking them out and buying them for a reasonable price would cost a fortune. I'm saying you already have all these open areas above and during motorways where you could put in monorails. And I'm not saying monorails that take 8 or 10 people or anything. I'm talking about massive monorails that can actually move tens of thousands of people, because it's a completely failed system to just rely on cars. And we've seen what happens. I was really happy when I saw that new development. Oh, look, there's a Mangere motorway. So I drove along the whole motorway, as I often do when something opens, drive there and have a look. But then, sure enough, a few years later, it's full and we're congested. You will never solve it by that. But with regard to the city, like, I like bikes and I like having them there, but watching them is actually scary, especially during rush hour traffic on the main roads, because you're worried for them. You drive along and you're thinking, look, this is really dangerous. Aside from the fact that you increase the congestion at the neck, at the bottlenecks, which is the main areas, what they do, for example, in Australia is there's certain times of day you do not allow road trains, for example, to come into the big cities. So likewise, I say, okay, from this time to this time, during rush hour, you should not have cycle lanes, for example, operating. Because number one, it's dangerous, and having them cut through and zigzag through and hope, It's not them causing the problem, but hope they don't get hit by a car is actually really scary. Mm. And as for buses, I'll give you an example. That's another reason I stood. Every morning I drive to work and see empty bus lanes at Manukau, and not just Manukau, all over the city at certain times of day. And there you have the Auckland Transport people with their black tops and yellow tops with their cameras getting there like a lane trap, like speed traps used to be, 150, 150, 150, 150 for empty lanes. So I actually saw one of them. What looked like a couple of the bosses were down there at Manukau. I said, what are you doing this for? They said, oh, because in the evening, it can take 45 minutes to go 200 meters. And I said, okay, that's good. But look, this isn't the evening. There is no traffic at all. There's no buses. And oh, there's one bus in the last 10 minutes. But they usually are in our lane, not even in your lane. What you're really doing is just money gouging. And that's it. And then they treat us like criminals. You get a parking ticket, and then next thing you know, goes to court because you don't really want to fight it because you don't have time. Then you don't want to put your name up and have to go into court and your name's on the wall. So a lot of people just let it go. But the problem is then if you get that, then they come after you with fines, treat you like a criminal, don't allow you out of the country, make you pay, and it's not $7 anymore for a parking ticket. It's suddenly 130 something. I know some people, they started with $70. They now are $1,000 to the court for fines because every single one gets a fee of 100 added and a $35 fee. So basically, Auckland Transit needs to be controlled. But back to bikes and lanes. Look, I'm happy enough at reasonable times, but certain times they shouldn't be, and buses, because the problem with buses is they still use the same roads. And we hear about trams and electric ones, and they're just buses with rubber wheels or electric buses. That is no change to say we're going to put in a tram. It's just like, let's change the color of it. It's like, we have light rail or monorail or heavy rail. What is it? Are we choosing a latte? It doesn't make any difference. It's still the same coffee. You're still drinking coffee, and that's not going to be achieved with what they're planning. And the problem is they're worth $19 billion in assets, Auckland Transport, and they're completely unaccountable to the public. Look at how they don't even come to meetings. Look at how they destroy businesses in West Lynn by putting a bike lane and people can't park. They have to listen to the local communities and people affected. And council is not doing that, and they will never do it unless they're brought to task and made to do it.
Yeah, well, I mean, that's also another thing in terms yes. of your commentary that you want to overhaul council. Mm-hmm. Can you tell me a bit about what that looks like?
Well, it's not so much overhaul council as make council do its job. Because council is set up to run the city, to provide the transport and infrastructure, etc. But it's not doing a good job. You need to look around you to see that. Just walk down the street. Look around you. Try to catch a train. Try to catch a bus somewhere. Drive a car, and you can see all the problems around you. Now, we're, of course, limited by what we can do by law and statute. But we have a lot of power, and used properly, the mayor flexing his muscles, we can make AT responsible to council and to the people, because their accountability comes through their responsibility and the control by council. You let that rope too loose on these monstrosities that are out of control, like AT especially, then they do whatever they please and they are doing it. Not only are they taking nearly half our rates, but they're also money gouging and collecting extra money on top of with their little ticket scam. There's only one word for it. Their ticket scams and everything else they're doing. Plus, they don't even tender all the billions of dollars of work that they're doing. How many of you have seen every single boom in the entire city be replaced thinking there's nothing wrong with them? Why are you ripping up these beautiful speckled pink sort of orangey paths in Ponsonby and Grey Lynn? There's nothing wrong with it. And replacing it with concrete. And what happens to the bluestone? I heard someone saying that that's sold back to council. What the heck? Some of it may not be criminal, but there's no way you can keep it going like this. So revamping council means first getting in there, seeing who is like-minded to make change, putting them in charge of committees to run them from the top down and say, this is what we're looking at. Are you in with our vision or not? Mm. and putting people in there who will no longer be directors with five or six professional directors with directorships, but people will say to them, this is your directorship. I want people who care about what they're doing, who are focused on that, and say, this is what I'm doing, that's my task, and I'm going to do it. And we'll share the same vision, and only by having a combined vision, which is provided by the mayor for change, can we achieve anything. You cannot change a culture like they've got without massive cuts of the dead rot.
If I may,
yes?
Just jump in here. That kind of sounds a little bit like a dictatorship almost, in terms of people have to be like-minded. That's okay. A little concerning. Would you explain?
Well, this is the general idea. We need change. But, of course, the mayor can't do everything by himself. So when I say that, it still means we have to discuss how you implement it, what degree of implementation is what's discussed and what you work out and consult with the people, what they want. But you still need to change the people there who are willing to listen. And it's not whether they have to agree with what I say or with some other appellation or greeting as used by Tamahere the other day. That's not the way it works. You get in there and you form a team. And that team has the task, and that is do what is best for Auckland. Get your job done efficiently. Build the roads, build the transport, fix up the sewers, fix up this. Try to keep it in budget. And within that, there's a lot of freedom as long as you're moving along the right direction.
And also, other mayoral candidates have brought this up, that they're potentially looking at having much more transparency in the books. Is that something you'd be advocating for
as
well?
Has to be. Yeah. Look, I think Mike Lee and the previous mayor were making a big deal of that. And they were changing some of the accountability rules, because we also set the accountability rules for the CCOs, council-controlled organisations, okay, for the AT Auckland Transport. Okay. Now, we set those rules, right? And what was the question again?
Would you be open to having the books open to the public?
Oh, that's the first thing I'd like to do.
Yeah.
Because the first thing that you ever do when you get in there is have a look through the books and work out, we know a little bit of what's been released, but what is really going on? And this is what I'm concerned about. Even back then, there were concerns that the excuse of commercial sensitivity was being used to hide information and not release it. And I think that's exactly what's been happening. And I would say with all of these organisations, unless you can show actual commercial sensitivity, you open every meeting. And council, it should not be hidden behind doors. I agree completely. The public needs to know what's going on. And if you have to hide it, there's usually a reason, right? Like no tendering, etc. Now, there may be some particular ones that require that, but there should be more of an explanation than there was a discussion behind closed doors about X or Y. And consultation needs to be consultation. We're so trained now by government consultation and council consultation, where you have a meeting, have a discussion, and then that's it. Then they do whatever they pleased in the first place. Well, that's not on. I want to make sure that when they have consultation, I want to say, okay, what was the consultation? What are you doing? What have you included? Because they have to be made responsible. And one person doesn't have the time to go over everything. That's why you put on like-minded people who have the interests of the community. And without these major changes, we're just going to crawl along again with increasing shortages of houses, the unitary plan saying we can't expand beyond these boundaries, prices being forced up, projects maybe in the south as you run out of space. I mean, look at these infill housing. You ever lived in one? Yeah, guess what? I've lived in them. And I tell you, you think they're bad, the rats breathe there like crazy. Okay, so imagine what it's like when you crowd all those people. Why do you think you get these diseases popping up in these areas? Aside from the lack of immunization, a lot of people are too poor to be able to go to the doctor. What happens when you get a place where you're not looking after the health care because people can't afford it? You're getting, and the problem is a lot of them have relatives or family coming in from third world countries. So what happens? You're bringing in all these things. One day we might have something like polio or something come back there as well, some real serious ones, because they're breeding grounds for disease if you don't have proper consideration. And also, rubbish collections, and they've stopped these inorganic as well. What do you think is going to happen? Do you think rubbish is just going to stop? Yeah, mm-hmm. You've got to think about this, because you cannot have problems festering in one area, because it will spread everywhere. There is no place safer. I mean, there was an example once I gave in a speech, and then next thing I gave a speech once, a week later I heard the Alliance Party quoting me. It was like this. Remember, there was one of the Fletchers had his home down the line. He had this beautiful home, and he was at his house, and he was killed by some kid that broke in, right? It was from Otara. You will never be completely safe as long as you allow the problems. You don't know when they're going to get you, but you do know that if you don't do something to try and alleviate crime and lack of resources and poverty, poverty will strike anywhere. No one's safe. And I'm not saying there's a scare tactic, but the reality is that's why I say it's insurance. You have to invest in a better life and a better future for everyone. And in my Auckland, no one gets left behind. Because when you give everyone a fair share of resources, guess who benefits the most? The poor.
I might just jump on one last thing, because I know you might be a little pressed for time. But you have said you are cautioning people against taking environmentalism too far. Could you explain about what that means?
Okay. Look, a lot of the people listening are students, and what you're taught is to use your own mind. Now, I got a science degree, and I say this. Now, I'm not trying to debunk anything, because, look, there's a chance that, just like evolution isn't proved, it's still a theory. That doesn't mean it might not be correct. Now, with carbon and global warming, hey, if there's factors pointing that, I say support everything and stop it. But the problem is, if you only focus on carbon, and in fact, a lot of it's been turned into a big money-making exercise for business, selling carbon credits for places that would never, ever use it. These people can now buy and limit and pollute as much as they please, because they can buy carbon credits. Before, they were limited by pollution. You cannot do this. Now, carte blanche, if you can afford it, you can buy it. And that's my other concern. Plastics. Look at all these plastics. I actually think that we should move towards banning creation of new plastics. There are huge, basically, mines or of plastic floating in the ocean. That's worth a fortune. Melt that down, reuse it, recycle those. If you make it hard to make new plastic, then they'll have to use that as a resource.
But I will say, with melting plastic, you do end up with another form of pollution in terms of those emissions.
And that's right. And, like, you're never going to get rid of everything.
No.
But the idea is, if you can remove as much as possible, and we do have developing technologies. So what I'm saying is, I say it's good, focus on climate control, focus on that, but don't let the other types of pollution sneak past, like plastics, like sewage, like other things that are also out there. So I'm just saying, keep it wide open and don't only focus on one to the exclusion of others. But we do not take chances with something as serious as global warming.
I mean, something you have said as well is that humans come first over plants and animals, which is an interesting take in the conversation on environmentalism, maybe. Yeah.
Well, put it this way. We've got a world, we've got animals. We're part of that whole biological system. But what makes us unique is we're intelligent. And human life, because of our intelligence, is that much more important. We have to have other animals. And in fact, humans have dominated the entire world, turned every other animal and plant under our control. But when we're dealing with Auckland Council, which is about controlling our area that we live in, you do not hurt our environment. You do not destroy our environment. You do not, like the mayor is doing now, wanting to pump sewage sludge out towards Great Barrier, right? And drop 1080 around all over the city. No, I'm completely against that. And cut all trees down unnecessarily. I love trees. was wondering, look, I was disgusted when they were trying to cut those trees down across from Western Springs and then people were chaining themselves to the fences. And I actually think that those people are heroes. They're not criminals. And I've seen them turn up in court and being charged with, like, some people were trying to chain themselves to the power station at Otara because it was giving off nitrous oxide, which is really dangerous for people with asthma. And no one in the area knew. I didn't know about it. These people are actually heroes. But what I'm saying is focus on people only because that's my job.
Mm.
Protect the environment. But that doesn't mean get rid of all the people. The environment, whether we like it or not, it still has to be subservient to the needs of our community. That's my position.
Interesting. Because I would think in terms of placing the needs of humans first, a lot of what Phil is doing by knocking down trees and all this is to build housing, which, okay, of course, we know in a city that is struggling for that. That is.
Yeah. Okay. Firstly, a lot of people are putting needs of humans first, greedy humans.
Yeah.
Not just ordinary humans. But you don't have to remove the parkland. You don't have to do that to build the houses there.
Mm.
They've put this artificial limit on the city. Now, it's good to not gobble up good farmland. I know because when I was raised in Otara there, we were right at the end. We had all farmland around us where I grew up. We used to get mushrooms on the dairy farm and the horse farm next to us, and then all that was gone. So we do need to protect that. But that's why I'm looking at satellite cities and also development along the sides of the main roads, but try not to gobble the good parts. And as for him plonking these houses here in 10,000, look, he talks about how he's housed 1,000 people. We're growing at 40,000 a year. So what little he's done or claims to have done, because I've spoken to some people from some of these organizations that aren't actually an opinion that what has been done, if anything, by council is actually good. But that's another thing. This mayor is taking credit for everything he says he's done, denying responsibility for all the bad things. Well, you can't have both, Phil. One or the other. You did the whole thing or you didn't. And I'll tell you what, you'd have to get up pretty early in the morning to, with your gumboots on at 6 o'clock, to go out and plant 1 million trees.
I might end it there unless you want to add anything else.
2 seconds.
2 seconds, go for it.
Okay, thank you. You've been listening to Stone, John Stone, Ted Johnston, the man of action to achieve what you need. So when you need problems, when you need someone to come in to fix it, that's when you call me.
That was a 95BFM podcast. Support 95BFM with a B-card. Go to 95BFM.com/signup.